Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to take a look at this month's upcoming lunar eclipse in the sign of Libra. It's on March 25th, so it's a little ways out, but it's never too early when eclipse season is upon us to start thinking about what the eclipses may bring. So today we're going to unpack some of the major dignity patterns that we find and some of the aspects in the sky that are happening around the eclipse. And then we're going to synthesize those details into some key takeaways or themes that you're likely to see coming with this eclipse. Later in the month, we'll unpack it more closer to the actual date of the eclipse, and I think we'll probably do a second round of horoscopes on them. You can also look back at the horoscopes for the month of March, where Alex and I break down horoscopes for all 12 signs, and we did talk about the lunar eclipse in Libra in that video as well. But yeah, today it'll be a good opportunity to sort of break it down and look at all of the dignity patterns that emerge when we study the eclipse. So that is our agenda for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections. We love hearing from you guys as always. You can find a transcript of today's talk or any of my talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. Now, in the meantime, I want to take you over to the website because there is another webinar coming up this week that I want to invite you to. So if you go over to nightlightastrology.com, let me just take us over there right now, and you click on the events page and go to live talks. There you will see the registration tab for Neptune in Love, which is happening this Thursday, March 14th. So you can sign up for that. It is $20 to attend. And if you cannot make it live, we send you a link to the recording afterward. And we also provide you with a link to join the live webinar once you register. You'll see last month we did Pluto in Love. We explored Pluto's significations in the birth chart and by transit in love and relationships. You can pick up that recorded talk. This month, we're doing Neptune in Love. And we're doing it as the sun and Neptune are actually coming together in the sky, which is kind of exciting. Let's see here. Oh, that's an interesting view. I've never done that before. Weird. I don't know how that happened. Hold on. Okay, there we go. That's better. So anyway, so that talk is this Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. And you can register there on the website. We hope to see you guys there. And again, if you can't make it live, you can get the link to the recording afterward. The other thing that I am promoting right now is Ashley's Herbal Apprenticeship Program, which you can find at skyhouseherbs.com. If you go to the Courses tab and click on the Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship, you can learn more about her one-year apprenticeship program, which begins in April. There are need-based tuition options open and available for that, as well as an early bird sale if you want to save on the tuition. Now is a good time to register. And at the end of today's video, if you stick around after the content has finished, you'll hear me interviewing Ashley. I did an interview with her, and I've been posting it to the end of the videos for people who want to learn more about the program and maybe sign up. So those are the big announcements for the day. Hope to see you guys at that Neptune in Love talk Thursday night. And let's turn our attention now to our eclipse. Here we go. All righty. So, got the eclipse up on the screen right here. This is happening Monday, March 25th. So, we're not so far away from this right now as we sit here on Monday the 11th. We are 2 weeks from today away from this eclipse. Now, it's happening very early in the morning. This is central time, about 2:53 in the morning. And so, depending on which time zone you're in, it's going to be the middle of the night. You could very well be experiencing this Sunday, March 24th, into Tuesday, March 26th. It's a kind of window in which you'll really notice it. The other thing to remember, something that's really important to note about eclipses, is that because they come in waves through the same signs over the course of, a year and a half or so, it is very common for the actual effects of eclipses to play out between 6 months to a year of the actual date of the eclipse. Although you will often see important events or experiences surrounding the actual day of eclipses, quite often they are representing things that are reaching critical turning points, but sometimes those turning points are a little subtle, and you may notice the big events related to the themes and topics of the houses the eclipses are happening in, not really manifesting for a little while, say two or three more moon cycles, or even up to 6 months or a year, especially when we have more and more eclipses pouring through the same signs and houses. So just keep that in mind, that they are, it's best to think about them as process oriented. You'll get disappointed if you think, oh, something big is going to happen on the day of an eclipse. Nonetheless, sometimes they do. So, all right, well, let's take a look at some of the key features of the lunar eclipse in Libra. And these, I probably will end up jumping around. There are seven of them that I wrote down that I want to call your attention to. And then I have synthesized them into five key themes. So number one is that this eclipse is taking place in Libra, right? We have see Libra right here. You can see the little glyph for the moon under the moon right there. This Libra is the domicile of Venus, the masculine air sign of Venus, and it is the exaltation of Saturn. The lunar eclipse is also happening in the first 5 degrees of Libra, which also happens to be the bound of Saturn. So it's interesting that the major planets that are hosting this eclipse are Venus and Saturn. And a lot of power to Saturn, actually, in this eclipse. And we'll talk about what that means in a minute. I just want to draw your attention to these details first. Number two is that Venus and Saturn themselves are just separating in Pisces. This eclipse, in other words, is being toned in a major way by Venus and Saturn, and we're seeing that the eclipse is happening just after Venus and Saturn have conjoined in Pisces. That's really important, and again, we're going to try to synthesize that later, but you see, we're getting an eclipse that's trying to point us to Venus-Saturn and their very recent conjunction that comes just prior to the eclipse. That Venus-Saturn conjunction is therefore very important for us to look at. It's not your average Venus-Saturn conjunction, because that conjunction is fueling the eclipse that comes just after it. So that's why I'm doing this in advance, because when we get to Venus-Saturn, you'll want to know that this Venus-Saturn conjunction is behind the energy of the upcoming eclipse, you know? All right, number three, both Venus and Saturn are closely sextile to Jupiter. Now, both Venus and Saturn, Venus is in her own exaltation in Pisces, but also the domicile of Jupiter. Saturn is in the exaltation of Venus and the domicile of Jupiter. Both are within 3 degrees of a sextile to Jupiter. Okay, so it's interesting that we have harmonious configuration between Venus and Saturn, who stand as the rulers of the eclipse, just separating in Pisces, and both configured to and in the domicile of Jupiter. Configured to Jupiter by sextile, which is of the nature of Venus, which means harmoniously. That is also a key feature. This eclipse, while it has some real Saturn energy in it, and Venus and Saturn are just coming off a conjunction, we know that sometimes Venus-Saturn conjunctions can be difficult. Nonetheless, these planets are configured to Jupiter in a sextile, and Jupiter is their host. That's a good thing. Really plays into the eclipse. It gives it a little bit more benevolence, you might say. But anyway, number four is that Saturn is in Jupiter's bound and domicile. So I just said that Saturn is in Jupiter's domicile, and so is Venus, and configured to Jupiter, right? What's also interesting to note is that at the time of the eclipse, Saturn is actually also in the bound of Jupiter. Let me just turn off this banner so you can see. There it is right there. Saturn's actually in the bound of Jupiter as well as the domicile of Jupiter, and configured to Jupiter by a sextile. So there's a nice harmonizing of Saturn and Jupiter behind this eclipse, and Saturn has a lot of power in the eclipse, right? And so does Venus. And they're both configured to Jupiter, but look at how much, how deferential and how much Saturn is kind of working cooperatively with Jupiter in this eclipse. We're going to talk again about what that means, but these are little details that you have to gather as you're doing your analysis. Okay, so we'll move on to the next one. Jupiter and Venus, who are also configured by a sextile, have mutual reception. So at the time of the eclipse, who is ruled in part by Venus and also by Saturn, Venus is in Jupiter's sign, configured by a sextile, while in her own exaltation, so nice dignity, nice connection with Jupiter. But Jupiter is also in its own bound in Taurus and in Venus's domicile. So that's called mutual reception. They have a form of mutual reception between one another. So Venus and Jupiter are working nicely together, Saturn and Jupiter are working nicely together, and Venus and Saturn together are the rulers of the eclipse. So you see how these things all pile together. Number six, Saturn is appearing as the morning star. It's now recently appeared as the morning star after the combustion Kazemi experience that it went through earlier in the month. So we had that kind of late February into early March. We had this triple conjunction between Mercury, the Sun, and Saturn. After that, Saturn starts rising and appearing as the morning star, which is Saturn's rebirth. So it's also important to mention that Saturn is in this very like young phase, which is weird. When we think about Saturn, we usually think about a planet that represents old age, but this is sort of a youthful young Saturn that's just gone through the transformation or death and rebirth process. And so that is also really important. You get a Saturn that is coming out as the morning star and representing something new. And so we're going to talk about that too. And then finally, it's also important to remember that all in all, this is a south node eclipse. South node eclipses have a little different meaning than north node eclipses. Lunar eclipses have different meanings than solar eclipses. We need to synthesize all of that. We know that south node eclipses tend to bring about resolution with things from the past, as well as emphasizing the kind of spiritual wisdom that's been harvested from old cycles. That's a very south node tendency for spiritual insight, crystallization of or harvesting of old like insights and wisdom that's been gained through experience or the harvesting of things through time and process. South node eclipses are like that. Lunar eclipses bring things to culmination and completion as they represent a kind of fullness, like the fruit coming onto the tree and ready, getting ready to be harvested. So there's a real theme of harvest that's also common for the sign of Libra, which takes place at the autumn equinox, which is the beginning of the harvest. So all in all, we have a like triple theme with the full moon, conclusion, resolution, harvesting, the south node, also wrapping up old cycles and harvesting, and Libra, a wrapping up of old cycles and harvesting. That's a lot of emphasis on the same things all coming together through three different symbols: full moon, south node, Libra. So now let's take all of that. And if you had a hard time following that, that's okay. It's not like the world's easiest thing to start developing an understanding of dignities and how they work. But most traditional astrologers, Hellenistic astrologers, medieval astrologers, Indian astrologers, you have to pay attention to all of those details because whether you share them with the audience or not, or whether, you know, that's always, you know, an option, but you have to pay attention to those details because all of those things go together to create something that's more distinct than just interpreting a lunar eclipse in Libra, right? So anyway, now the reason that I like to present them now and then is because there is a significant portion of the audience on this channel who are students of astrology and who have expressed interest over the past couple of years in my sharing more of the details of analysis that can be educational. I think it's fine to do so as long as we then synthesize them and make sure that the takeaways are really clear for people who may not be interested in the technical portion. Then you just know what the synthesized themes are. So anyway, the number one synthesized theme, and they're not in like in order of importance, just 1 through 5 that I wrote down. This eclipse serves as a moment of integrated Saturnian wisdom and maturity. Look, Saturn as the exaltation ruler of Libra, with so much emphasis on the harvesting, and the harvesting, of course, is a moment of maturity. It's a moment of reaping what's been sown, and it's a moment of understanding, and it's a moment of wisdom, and there's a sense of time that has come before, all Saturnian themes, with so much emphasis on the rulership of Saturn, and Saturn playing such a big role in the dignities right now, and Saturn being configured in the ways that Saturn is to Jupiter, the recent conjunction to Venus, et cetera, et cetera. We can say that this is a moment of harvesting, of realization, of greater maturity and depth, where we see old cycles, you know, wrapping up, but that real, there may be a little bit of a bittersweet moment. It's not easy to mature. A Saturnian south node eclipse, with a strong flavor of Saturn. Now, granted, there's a lot of benefic energy in here with Venus and Jupiter, but there's something a little bittersweet, and there's something about, you know, I've grown wiser, I've grown older, I've had some hard knocks, but I'm coming to synthesize a lot of growth, and there's been a lot of maturity, and that's a real tone that kind of rings out around this eclipse. It has the feeling of Saturnian wisdom that's been hard fought, hard won. All right, number two, this wisdom and maturity, however, is also closely linked to Venusian themes: friends, allies, community, your values, love, sex, relationships, art, beauty, the honoring of the feminine, the sensual, the embodied. there's something about this moment of integrated wisdom and growth and maturity that is intensely flavored by Venus and the power that Venus has in the sky this first half of the year. Venus is exalted as the ruler of one of the rulers of the eclipse, just separating from Saturn, again, suggesting that there's a kind of Venusian wisdom and maturity that's happening. I think, for example, in the image of this eclipse, if I were to just throw up images that come to my mind, one would be of a wise woman, maybe has gone through different phases of life. She's a wise elder woman, something like that. Now, that doesn't have to, you don't take that literally, right? Because there's a part of that maybe that resides in all of us, regardless of gender or, you know, or age or stage of life. So, wisdom and maturity of Saturn closely linked to Venus. Venus and Jupiter, number three, are working together for the sake of creating a Venusian breakthrough, which is in turn rooted in the Saturnian themes of karmic reckoning and maturity. See, what's interesting is we know that within another month from this eclipse, we have Jupiter and Uranus conjoining in Taurus. The desire is there to create a breakthrough that provides greater coherence and meaning and stability and enjoyment and pleasure and sensual gratification, all of those rich Taurian themes that are both stable and sort of lovely and enjoyable. And that's the Venusian value system that's working to create some kind of new possibility or new opening in our lives. And that's going to look a little bit different depending on the whole sign house of Taurus in your chart, right? But what I'm taking away from this is that right now in the sky, with the mutual reception between Venus and Jupiter and the fact that Saturn's also nicely configured to Jupiter, whatever themes of karmic reckoning, maturity, growth that this eclipse entails, it also comes with the sense that this maturity is really going to bolster and support this upcoming Jupiter-Uranus breakthrough, which ultimately is in the service of these kind of earthy Venusian desires and ideals. So it's nice that there's this kind of moment of maturing that is like necessary somehow right before this picture of a breakthrough that's coming. And again, the breakthrough is so much about Venus, Jupiter and Uranus in Venus's sign, in the moon's exaltation, peace, comfort, ease, flow, harmony, sensuality, enjoyment, and all of the maturing that's happening right now. We can imagine it as potentially creating an easier situation for us, or a more grounded or stable or luxurious, or, you know, you use any of the keywords that come to your mind, kind of existence. Now, most likely we're reconciling ideals with a more grounded outlook that we have developed or being forced to develop. The reason I say this is that Libra, the south node in Libra is an incredibly idealistic sign. It is a sign that is related to the realm of the Platonic forms. Here you have Saturn, a planet that was the dimmest, most distant planet at the edge of the solar system, closest to the realm of the gods, of the forms, I should say. Obviously, Kronos is a god, but beyond that, right, to this higher realm of the mind of God, the forms that inform the universe. And this is the exaltation of Saturn. This is also the place of Venus, the place of beauty. For the ancient Greek philosophers, the universe and the pursuit of truth was not just an intellectual pursuit, but it was an aesthetic one. Truth is ideal and beautiful and true. So when you think about the idealism of this eclipse, but it's a south node eclipse, but it's a lunar eclipse, and we have this kind of Venus-Saturn reconciling through their conjunction that they're doing, a lot of the times what that means, especially in a double-bodied water sign, very feminine, very embodied sign, and then so much embodied energy in Taurus, is that right now we're trying to figure out how to reconcile ideal images, things that we see as perfect or perfectly ideal for us, with the earthly reality that we live in. And that's what this maturing in some ways might be about. I'm maturing because I'm having to compromise. I'm maturing because I'm creating a breakthrough that's been informed by some hard and difficult growth work, but that growth work has provided me with a more ideal picture for how to live my life. So these are the kinds of things that I see happening given all of the dignities we talked about. We're reconciling high-minded sort of Venusian ideals with more grounded outlooks that we've had to develop we've been forced to develop And that eclipse is highlighting all of that. Finally, this last minute maturing will fuel the upcoming breakthroughs of Jupiter-Uranus. In a way, we've been talking about the breakthroughs of Jupiter, the breakthrough or breakthroughs that we'll all experience from Jupiter and Uranus for a long time, right? We've been daydreaming about it for a while. Isn't it interesting to think, though, that we don't always look at what's coming right before the breakthrough, you know, because if we look at that, we get a feeling for what might, where is the impetus to create some breakthrough or to have one? Well, the impetus is coming often from what's preceded maybe for many years and maybe many different cycles that we could track in our charts, but it's also coming from literally what comes right before it in the sky at the time of the actual Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And this is it. And so this last minute moment of kind of karmic balancing of the scales in Libra, a feeling of karmic fruition and completion, the judgment and evaluation and reaping of what's been sown in a moment of crystallized maturity from Venus and Saturn that's coming in to fuel Jupiter-Uranus. That's profound if you think about it. I mean, the potential for us to have these kinds of really powerful, cathartic moments of karmic completion right now, here in the month of March, toward the end of March, that then fuel this just powerful takeoff in the next month. Of course, we have a solar eclipse in Aries, a sign that loves to start pressing the gas pedal. And then we've got Jupiter-Uranus by the end of the month. So even though this lunar eclipse has some signs of like, you know, you shall reap what's been sown, and there's a kind of theme of like karmic harvesting that could be a little intense, there's so much favorable benefic connections between Venus and Jupiter and the upcoming Jupiter-Uranus dynamic that I think we have to consider that whatever comes up right now is actually preparing us for the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction that's coming up at the end of April. And if we look at it that way, I think it's easier to work through whatever challenges might be coming. So anyway, this was the galaxy brain version of the lunar eclipse in Libra, but we will have some other ways of breaking it down, including more horoscopes before the actual date of the eclipse, or maybe even on the date of the eclipse. That might be fun. So stay tuned for more. Don't forget this Thursday night, if you go over to nightlightastrology.com, on Thursday night, we have a webinar on Neptune and Neptune's significations when Neptune is involved in love and relationships. So if you go over to the website, nightlightastrology.com, click on the events page, go to live talks, scroll down, Neptune in love, click to register, join us. If you can't make it live Thursday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, the replay will be sent to you. So I hope to see some of you there. The Pluto in love talk was awesome. I really, really enjoyed that. And I can't wait to do this new one on Neptune in love. And then in April, we're doing Uranus as well. So should be fun. All right, that is it for today. I hope you guys, by the way, I moved my camera. What do you guys think? All right, that's it. Bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for sticking around. I'm really happy to be joined by my wife, Ashley, who is an herbalist. Hi, Ashley.
Hey.
And yeah, I'm really excited to be helping Ashley promote her upcoming program, which is something that you actually began teaching many years ago, this herbal apprenticeship program. I think it was, 2011 or 12 that it got started, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been over 10 years I've been offering this course, and yeah, it's my favorite thing to teach.
Yeah. And just to be clear, because some people on my channel, most people know you because you pop on here or there. We talk about herbs and astrology. There's an attraction in our marriage and an attraction in the subject matter that is old. Like, we've been together for, you know, 14 years in our relationship going on. And we've always had a fascination with each other's areas of expertise. And we've done lots of things to marry them together over the years, in addition to literally getting married. And and actually, herbalists and astrologers have married the subjects of herbs and planets together for thousands of years as well. Now, your program is focused on, you know, herbalism. It's not an astrology course, but there is certainly a lot of overlap in terms of the energetics and the spiritual approach to herbalism that you take. And so I was hoping that we could start off just by telling people a little bit about the program. You're coming to this after taking a little bit of time on maternity leave. Our kids were not yet in school. Now they are. You're coming back to work. This is really exciting. The new program launches at the end of April. I'm going to put it up on the screen so people can see it. You can find it at skyhouseherbs.com herbalfoundations.com. Enrollment is open now. The course begins. You go under courses, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship at the end of April. Tell us about it.
Well, this course, I guess my goal in redesigning the apprenticeship course that I've been teaching for 10 years is to make it even more personal and to allow people to study the material, digest it at their own pace. So what it's going to be is a combination of kind of three main parts. The first one is the recorded material. So there's going to be modules that will be released and people can listen to them as they, you know, as they have time. The second part are live classes where we will meet live on Zoom and talk about the module, I'll answer questions, I'll give even more information about it. And then the third part is the sacred plant pairings. And so I've always taught the herbal portion, like the plant diets, one at a time, but this year I'm going to do it in pairs because I think you can learn a lot by comparing and contrasting herbs. So for every module, you'll have two herbs to study and you'll get a little cheat sheet about them before you start the module. And then you'll have an opportunity to work with those two plants and blend them and keep them separate and just really work with them closely. Because my goal is that I want people to be able to find information that they can really use in their own lives, maybe with clients, whether they have a professional herbal practice or maybe they're a therapist in a different field, that they'll know these plants so that they can work with them really comfortably.
I love the different modules that you have, just so we can preview them for people. Module one is Vitalism and the Heart of Herbalism. Module two, Building Your Home Apothecary. They're so diverse. I love module three is my favorite, Plant Spirit Medicine, Energetics and Chemistry. You have such a holistic approach. It's what I've always loved about your teaching. You'll teach about the doctrine of signatures. You'll talk to people about how to communicate with plants, how to think of them as teachers that are living beings, that have personalities, that aren't just, you know, phytochemistry or whatever. But you will also teach phytochemistry. And I think that you have this really well-rounded way of helping people be intelligent about the plants, about the body, about the systems of the body, but also not afraid to use energetic systems, not afraid to take something from the kinds of energetics that ancient mystics were working with, whether that's the elements or whether that's, you know, some of the overlay with things like Ayurveda, Chinese medicine. You take what's useful on a symbolic and energetic plane and on a personal connection level with the plants, and you marry it to really smart scientific research. I think that that's rare. You don't see that a lot.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah. To me, it's all language. They're just different languages that we talk about the same thing. And I think the more diverse our languages as herbalists, the more we can reach more people. And that's kind of my goal. Like, I want everyone to like be able to identify plants, use plants. So we need to diversify the languages we speak. So we can talk with our physicians. So we can talk with a therapist. We can talk with a mystic, right? We can talk with children. And we have a language that everyone can use.
You talk in the program, in your modules, you have stuff on digestive and gut health. You have stuff on detoxification, colds and flus, and, you know, dealing with virus seasons. You talk about tissue states, and you're talking about how to give things to your kids for, you know, helping them maybe at times even relax before bed at night. We use a lot of different things with our kids. I love this, that you have called this a, I'm going to find the phrase where you use that you use, and I'm going to mess it up. A community herbalist. What is a community herbalist, so that people can understand that definition? Because sometimes people might look at a course like this and think, gosh, unless I go to an accredited university for, you know, 8 years and learn all about chemistry, I have no right or business suggesting herbs to people or using herbs. That's just not true. And that's not the history of how folk herbal medicine has been used or taught. So what do you mean when you say community herbalist?
I think you said it perfectly. This is the people's medicine, and our grandmothers and great grandparents used plants as medicine. There's nothing actually that like hard about the practice of herbal medicine. It's just getting to know the plants and getting to know the times when they're most useful. I really envision that this course, people can take it and yes, use it for themselves, number one, because I think a lot changes when we have the personal experience. And then using it in your family, whether that's just, you know, maybe making a tea for your dog, or, you know, if you have kids, or maybe you just have a partner, maybe you have plants you can use, and we'll talk about taking care of a garden, but using it for yourself, for whoever's immediately around you, and then taking it beyond that, because it's likely that at some point you're going to be talking with someone, they're going to say, oh, you know, I've got this digestion thing and I've tried this and this. And they might say, hey, you're studying herbs. Is there anything that you would recommend? And you know what? You'll probably have a few ideas. And that, you know, you never know how one way that you help someone out there in the world might trickle and then help others and more people. So I think through the self-knowledge and studying this knowledge in your own body, it'll naturally, it's like, you know, impossible for it not to spread out and start to affect the broader community.
Yeah, I think that's really important. This is also for that reason, because we have a vision. I mean, you guys know through my Kickstarter, you guys helped us build a community herbal medicine garden that Ashley's been hosting free and donation-based events out of, that the donations go back to right back into the garden and just growing the medicine that we then find ways of harvesting and giving to other people or letting other people come and harvest. We have a vision. We always have, back to the days when we had our yoga studio in Maryland. We have always had a vision of making this sacred knowledge accessible to people. And that is both there in this program in terms of the way you're framing what it means to be an herbalist. It might mean that you're a professional and you see clients and you could continue beyond this program developing the skills to do that. This would certainly set you up for success. You could also go forward and be someone who uses what you know with friends and family and yourself. And that's an incredible set of tools to have. The program's also very accessible from both a programming standpoint and a price standpoint. I'll take you back over and show everybody. The programs, the modules are pre-recorded, but then you meet outside of the modules for discussion, community, Q&A, and sort of development and integration. So people can attend those live. If they miss those integration sessions, they can also watch the replays of those. So
absolutely, yeah.
Anyone could take this at their own rate, you know, as slowly or as quickly as you wanted to, really soak it in, or blaze through it. And, you know, and then we can certainly, beyond this program, as Ashley perhaps makes more advanced programs available as she's easing back in out of maternity leave, can help you with further development or recommend you to many other wonderful programs where you can continue your studies. We want this to be accessible. We want community herbalism to be, you know, as simple as being able to show a friend a couple of yoga stretches. We should be able to show each other herbs, you know, and just, hey, this is a helpful herb to use. Also, accessibility price-wise, we have an early bird enrollment and we have a standard enrollment. And then we have tuition level 1 assistance and tuition assistance level 2, which break out the affordable tuition into different levels of affordability. And you can kind of identify where you're at if you're someone who wants to take this program but needs to work within your means and not hurt yourself doing it. And then for those who can pay, we ask that you use standard or early bird enrollment. And that's the same thing I do for all my astrology programs. So we try to keep it super, super accessible. The Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts April 24th. I know Ashley's super excited to be getting back into teaching too. I also would like to offer Ashley just a chance to tell everyone a little bit about, before we end here this interview, tell everyone maybe a little bit about your own background, who you studied with, what your influences are, and just anything else you want to say before we cap it off.
Ooh, okay. well, I think, you know, I started off as a kid playing in the woods, mixing perfumes and potions. And then I went on to study environmental science, where I studied organic chemistry and restoring native wetlands. And really from an environmental perspective, that's how I got into herbalism. And then after, you know, I realized after working on the restoration piece and joining a lot of earth advocacy groups, that the problem's not with the earth, but with the people not mm-hmm. understanding the value of the earth. So then I started going into holistic medicine. I graduated from University of North Carolina, Asheville, with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. And I went on to get my That was my undergrad. And then I got my master's from the Maryland University of Integrative Health. It was then called Thai Sophia. But my teachers there, you know, I had such a great blend of teachers, really scientific minds, like Simon Mills from the UK and Kevin Spellman, who is like a chemistry genius. He's also an Ayurvedic practitioner, studied with Dr. Vasant Lad. Matthew Prisco, medicine maker from Galen's Way out in California. So I had a really wonderful, diverse variety of teachers in that 3-year full-time master's level program. And then after that, I went on to study with Matthew Wood pretty intensively because I liked his energetics. I liked the way he spoke about the plants and his personal experience working with low dose, drop dose medicine. And he has had amazing, he's done such amazing work herbally with just using that method. And I've got a lot of herbalists in my basket.
David Duke comes to mind.
Margie Flint, Rosemary Gladstar is like, I've only done one herb walk with her, but it was amazing. So, you know, I have shelves of herbal books and people who I just adore. And yeah, I just feel really grateful that I've had that blend of the science and the energetic herbalism and the traditional herbalist perspective as well. And I try my best to blend them together and to give everyone a really diverse yet integrated herbal studying experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that. That is exactly what you'll get if you sign up for Ashley's program, which I encourage you to do. If this is the kind of thing that interests you, you won't regret it. It's a fantastic course with someone I absolutely love, obviously, but also like a really, truly fantastic human being and teacher of plant medicine. And if you want to learn more about her, see her work, get to know her a little bit, check out her YouTube channel, Sky House Herbs, where she publishes weekly on plant medicine, plant energetics, and also on Instagram, which is Sky House Herbs. So the apprenticeship program starts April 24th. I wanted to get Ashley on, brag about her program, turn you guys on to it. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure that we're going to see some people from the Nightlight astrology world getting introduced to you and all of your magic.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.